today on Doomed!
Everything's coming up roses for me and for you.
All right, everybody, welcome to today's episode of Doomed with Matt Binder. And yes, that's true, everything is coming up roses. At least in PA, where four Democratic, socialist-backed women candidates just won their primaries. And on today's episode of Doomed, we're talking to all of them. That's right, an episode of Doomed that proves that we may not be all so doomed after all. So let's do this and invite our guests on the show. Just pulling everybody up here, turning off the all the graphics and all that stuff that are on the screen right now. Here we go. All right, let's do this. From Pittsburgh, and they're together on the stream, which is great to see. Means one less person for me to worry about getting on the Skype call.
Yeah.
So from Pittsburgh, we have Summer Lee and Sarah Inamorato. And
hey.
There we go. And from Philly, we've got Elizabeth Fiedler and Kristen Seal.
And Elizabeth's child.
And there's a child, yes.
Can you hear that?
We could, but yeah. Don't worry about it. I have a 2.5-year-old, and what I do when I do the show is that his mom just has to take him out. That's what happens.
Yeah. Makes sense.
But so let's do this. I'm like really pumped to have all you guys on, because when I saw this news, I don't know how else to say it, but I was like really excited. We have really, we're living under an age where, you know, there's open white supremacists and Nazis and people who believe that there are sex rings in the basement of pizza places. And that Donald Trump is some sort of god emperor. And at the same time, on the other side, we have democratic socialists just really coming out of, I would say like since the Bernie Sanders campaign really made it seem to the rest of the country that, you know, those words, democratic socialist, are not spooky. Nothing to be scared of.
Mm-hmm. We're just everyday people.
Exactly. Exactly. So let's really talk about what happened here, because we have four winners here who won the Democratic primary. And from what I've seen, looking at the results, for the most part, it seems like it wasn't even close with most of, if not all, your races. So let's start in Pittsburgh, because the two of them are together and outside, and it just seems like, you know, let's go outside.
Sun is shining.
Yeah, it is.
So
it's nice in Pittsburgh, finally.
Right. It's nice here in New York, too. It's like hot and it's hot. And yeah.
Yeah.
So you guys actually both faced off in your respective races. You faced cousins, the Costas. And one of them, Paul Costa, is a 20-year incumbent. And Dom Costa is a former Pittsburgh police chief. So, I mean, you guys were coming out. Like, first of all, why don't you tell me each of your backgrounds? Summer, why don't we start with you? What is your background? What made you jump into this race for the state house race for, what was it? The house district that is... 34. Thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I am a lawyer, I guess. I'm a non-practicing lawyer. We actually argued about this on my campaign a lot, whether we were going to use the word attorney or not. So I am licensed, but I'm just not practicing. I'm an organizer, so I was actually just organizing, like political organizing, and that kind of led me into community organizing, and then a tiny wee bit of labor organizing. But I was doing a lot of that, and I was kind of like looking at just the political atmosphere in my community. A lot of people, which is like a small steel town. I'm right outside of Pittsburgh.
Right.
Largely black, very poor. We have a lot of issues in our communities, but honestly, a lot of the issues we have in our communities are issues that are in communities just like it all over the country. And I just saw that usually we don't have anybody who represents us. we don't have anyone who looks like us or anyone who really has lived the experiences that we've lived in any capacity serving us. So I had this theory that if we had more people like that, if the community were actually a part of running these campaigns, a part of building their own communities, you know, because we can fight off gentrification that way. We can fight off, you know, political attacks if we are the ones who are building our own communities. So that was my theory. And I kind of got to test it when our school district had some issues. So I ended up organizing my school, my community around our school district. Getting new people on the school board was our first run. And they needed to go. They were terrible. They were elected officials. They were every bad stereotype. So we ran a writing campaign to get them out, and people responded. And it was exactly what I thought. You know, people were interested and energized, and people had already been organizing for the year. And I mean, oh, they turned out. And we were really able to do something. And I really think start something special. So when it came time, someone came to me and was like, oh, you should run too. And I was like, not prepared for that at all. And I had never considered it. But here I am.
I'm glad you considered it.
Yeah.
You won with, what, 67% of the vote in your, right?
I think it was 68.
68. Well, I don't want to get that wrong. That's important. 68, right?
No, that 1%.
Right. And what your district, I believe, is it's more than two-thirds white residents. Because I was reading an interview you had previously in a local paper where, you know, you made the point, and I think it's a great point, that, you know, a black woman could represent anywhere. They don't have to just win races in a black majority district.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that that's what we've been seeing. I mean, black women vote, especially for the Democratic Party. Black women turn up for the Democratic Party. Every time we've had a crisis, you see black women are always voting on the right, you know, the right side of these things. And we vote in high proportions, too. But what you don't see is any sort of increase in support for black women candidates anywhere in the country, really. So a part of that is like the theory that you can't run black candidates or women candidates, and God forbid, both at the same time, in areas that are not like gerrymandered to be black or women areas. So to see that we were able to take our message, that I, you know, a young black woman was able to deliver this message everywhere in my district. And my district is quite diverse. Yeah, it's very white, but it's also economically diverse. We have poor areas. We have rich areas. You know, we have these river towns like Sarah does that, I mean, ours are just blacker and poorer, but still river towns and still poor. We took the same message everywhere and people really responded to it. And honestly, I think the results show that at the end of the day, was a fear that it was a needless fear. And I think that we need to be able to, I think the party needs to be a little bit more daring and supporting these type of candidacies, because clearly the people are ready. Clearly that the people want these. And right. Our perspective is something that is absolutely needed in right. these spaces.
Right. So Sarah, let's move on to you with your district, which is District 21, House District 21. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Tell me about your background and what made you jump into this race.
So, like Summer, I lived in my district my entire life. I had a solid middle-class lifestyle until we found out my father was addicted to opioids. And that set off a chain of housing and food insecurity. I'm watching some person doing a great job. But, you know, I went from having this really solid foundation, like, you know, going to go to college that was going to be paid for, to really not having anything and not having a mom who had worked for nearly 20 years. So really saw that things could change in an instant. And I ended up putting myself through school. I wanted to study business because I knew that was like, no one else in my family had gone to college. And I was like, this is how you not be poor. Like you study business and you get like a good corporate job, and that way I can like take care of my family. Mm-hmm. And I graduated in 2008 and there were no jobs. So I was doing the hustle that I'd been doing since I was a teen, and did land at a corporation for a while. And then during that time, my dad had passed away, and, you know, finally not having to feel like I had to care for him anymore, I was able to look beyond the traditional path and say, like, how can I give back to my community? How can I be more involved? I was looking at going into the Peace Corps, and then I looked in my own backyard and I was like, there's a lot of work to do right here. So I ended up in community development and environmental work. and was there for a number of years, and then ended up going out on my own and starting my own consultancy, working with nonprofits and government agencies. And I was doing a program for women in leadership, and worked with a woman who had been involved in politics for about 10 years, and we founded a group called She Runs, just to encourage more women to run for office in Southwestern PA, because Pennsylvania is ranked 49th when you aggregate women in elected office at a local, state, and federal level.
Yep.
And we knew that navigating Southwestern PA politics is very different than navigating politics in Philadelphia even. So we wanted to just provide resources and be an independent, autonomous entity to just help women see themselves in these elected officials. Then the 2016 election happened, and people were very like, what do we do? And we were like, we don't know. We've been doing this for like 4 months.
Right.
We're still figuring it out, too. So I found myself asking women to run. And I knew we had a representative who was one of the Democrats, who was arguably the most conservative Democrat in the state. And I was like, wow, we really need a progressive woman to run against him. And I found myself across the table from women, business owners, and women who held elected office at a borough level, and was like, you should run for office. Like, I would love for you to be my state representative. And they were like, well, why don't you run? And I was like, oh, okay. So
I feel like that's like a common theme. Yeah. Like, you should do it. Wait, what?
Yeah. So, and that, I think that speaks to, right, like the camaraderie that is really evident in this election cycle, and that, you know, you hear from Kristen and Liz too, and how we've been able to work together to be able to support one another and amplify one another's message and share resources, as opposed to fight fake narrative of scarcity.
Right. It's, you know, when you said that you graduated into 2008, you graduated. You know, I was in the same boat. I graduated in 2008, and graduating right into the recession, I feel like in that many ways, sort of like I feel like for our generation specifically, sort of, you know, coming into the recession when we were supposed to do everything that we were told to do, you know, it sort of radicalized us in a way that I think previous generations just still, I think, are struggling to understand just where this is coming from. Mm-hmm. Why are all these millennials so, you know, angry about...
Why don't we
do
things by the book?
Right, and why are we doing things differently, and why are we, you know, so progressive? And, you know, it's maybe they'll just never see it, but I think 2016 was maybe not, you know, maybe it pushed our generation to go into, to run for office and say that we can do that too. But I think like, politically, we were already there, but 2016 might have been the push the previous generations needed to say, yeah, these people can do it. Like, these are the people, you know, we see what they were talking about now. So let's jump over to Philly, and let's talk with Elizabeth. Elizabeth, you ran for, I have it all here, it's just in a pile of notes, District 184, correct?
Correct.
And so tell me, what's your background, and what made you want to jump into the race?
Sure. So I worked as a reporter for the local NPR station, WHYY, for 11 years in Philly, covering politics, education, healthcare, and that was really my career. I started that job after working as a waitress for 6 years. So waitressing to reporting, and then I decided to run for office. And I actually, Kristen and I met at a training back in July. And then I met Sarah in summer in February. So I've been fortunate to meet a lot of great people along the path. And, you know, I really decided to run because I think that so many people I talk to here in South Philly want the same things: high quality health care, good schools, clean water, clean air. I'm the mom of two little kids. Both my parents were public school teachers. I'm active in the community. And I feel so deeply that those are things that we can and should have, and that we need elected officials fighting for them. And when I announced that I was running, I was in a similar situation to Sarah and Summer in that I announced and I was running against a 25-year incumbent. He dropped out of the race while I was in. He dropped out in February, and three other people subsequently got in. So it was a four-way race by the time we got to May. And I'm very proud to say I got 51% of the vote in a four-way race. And
that's incredible.
Yeah, thank you. And it was all, you know, it was a lot of me knocking doors, sometimes with one kid. I have two children, sometimes with a baby tagging along, and volunteer effort, like I'm sure that you'll hear from other folks too. You know, it really was, it was a community effort. It was not just me, but I did, I decided to run because I just was really tired of the kind of choices that we usually get and some of the false options, right? You can only have this. Mm-hmm. You can't have that too. There's not enough. You know, I think people here in South Philly, when I knocked on doors and when I talked to people at community meetings, they were tired of corporations making huge profits. They were tired of the super rich getting richer. And they kept saying, like, why don't we have more politicians? Why aren't there more elected officials who are saying that and who are really fighting for people? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I went along on a similar journey where I thought, like, well, who's going to run? Somebody's got to run. Who's running? And then, you know, I stepped up and ran. So, yeah, that's how I got where I am today.
Perfect. And Kristen, let's you ran in House District 168.
That's right.
So tell me your background and what made you want to jump in.
Sure. Kara and I have a little bit of overlap in our backgrounds. I come from public service and nonprofit work in public policy. So my first connection pre-DSA was actually with La Raza Unida in New Mexico. I worked in the Albuquerque area first in women's health policy in the Santa Fe legislature, and then after that at the Center on Law and Poverty, where I largely worked on the healthcare team, doing the statewide messaging for the rollout to the Affordable Care Act, where we were able to get 300,000 new people enrolled in healthcare. It's one of the poorest states in the country. Challenges that are different than other poor areas of the country. Like, they have geographical challenges that are really specific, and language issues that other places don't have. So, but we worked on other issues too, like a fair funding formula for Albuquerque public schools. We were able to stop, you know, solitary confinement for juveniles in jails and prisons in New Mexico. So we did a lot of work across a lot of issue areas. And we moved to Pennsylvania 5 years ago. I landed accidentally in the energy efficiency industry, working on statewide policy to help protect electric ratepayers from increases by utilities. But it's also where my organization is responsible for the state's law that compels all utilities in the state to do conservation work and energy efficiency programs for everyone.
Sorry, Kristen, you just broke up a little bit. Just repeat what you said. Just a little. Just go back a little bit. Yeah.
I work in energy efficiency policy now for an organization that works on energy efficiency policy. We also do education. So I run a statewide schools program for K-12 public schools. And, you know, we just participated in the state Envirothon. So I'm a little bit in the environmental space, but with an organization that makes a jobs and economic argument for energy conservation in a way that saves electric ratepayers. So we've saved people in the state, I think it's $6.1 billion since 2008 on their electric bill. So it's, I've spent a lot of time working in the public policy space on trying to make sure that vulnerable people have their needs met, but also have a level playing field and opportunity.
Right. Yeah. It seems like everybody here has a background that really makes sense that you would go into public office. I mean, it's perfect. And now that we've everyone's introduced, we can sort of have like, you know, an open conversation, discussion, no need to, anyone could just jump in and let's talk. So when you guys jumped into your respective races, what were you expecting when it came to sort of, I guess, how you would be seen by both the establishment in the Democratic Party? I think all of you went up against, some of you went up against incumbents who've been around forever, and others were up against, you know, people who probably had backing from the local Democratic Party or the state Democratic Party. So what was the reaction from the establishment candidates in the race and their campaigns when you guys jumped in? And anyone can feel free to jump in and take this.
For me, there was a lot of silence on the other end. I reached out to everybody. Most people I reached out to multiple times. So I sent them both a physical letter. I called them. Some folks I showed up at their house just to introduce myself, right? Just to say, listen, this is who I am. This is why I'm running. If you choose to support me, if you don't, that's fine. That's absolutely your choice. But I just want to have that face-to-face conversation, right? I want to tell you straight why I'm running and who I am, because I know that you're going to hear other stories from other sides. And I did not get very many responses. I think I got two responses to like the, I don't know, 65 letters that I sent out to all the people that I reached out to. And that for me was a little surprising. I mean, I knew I was running against a 25-year incumbent who had the backing of the party, right? I knew that getting into it. That wasn't surprising to me, but it was a little bit surprising to me how minimal of a response I got from different people within the establishment, within the party, elected officials. I thought I would at least get to have a meeting or get to have a discussion with some people, and that didn't happen. So that I did find surprising.
Well, so for Elizabeth, it seems like, I mean, their hope was that if they just ignored you, I guess you'd go away.
Maybe. And I think, I don't know if you all had this case, but I think that a lot of people underestimated us. People said, I had a few people say to me and then say to people who told me like, oh, it's nice that she's running. That's great. Like, it's so nice that there's like a mom who's running the race. Like, just
mom.
A nice mom. Just condescending, right? That's the word for it. Not taking me seriously. So, and I think some of that is because I was a first-time candidate, but some of it was also because I was relying on sources of power and sources of strength that were not traditional Democratic Party places, right? I mean, we were working really hard to recruit a lot of people in our community and organize people who have not been involved directly in the political process. And they were the ones who ran the committee person, which is like our very most local elected office. They were the ones who stepped up by the end as super volunteers. And they were training the other volunteers, right? They had the passion and the excitement. They just had not been included in the political process before. So I think that was another reason we were underestimated, was because some people in the establishment said, like, who are those folks? Well, they're people who live in the neighborhood. That's the answer. But
right.
I don't know. I feel like I had maybe a different experience. I feel like mine was like overwhelmingly positive. Even from the beginning. I mean, I guess because as an organizer, as somebody who had, honestly, I had already organized a lot of the communities that were a part of my district. You know, I organized them with the Hillary campaign, again, with the school district thing. So when I went to,
Summer, you broke up just a little bit. Just go back a little bit and repeat. You just broke up a little bit.
Okay. No, I was saying that, you know, I didn't go to the party. I didn't go to the top. I went straight to the people. So when I went to the people, you know, we organized them first. My biggest shock was just how supportive folk were. When we came and we said, okay, we're running, people just circled the wagons around us. How can we help? What can we do? And I mean, just surprising people, like people from other communities, people, you know, from all demographics were all like, how can we help you? And we were doing like house parties, and then people were donating. And when we first launched our first like volunteer kind of contact, it was the first day in Pittsburgh that it was below zero. So we're like, no one's coming. We got to cancel. 30 people still came. So there was that sort of excitement. And I think our kickoff was the same way. So honestly, every step of the way, I was like, this is going to end. You know, something's gonna happen, and that was crazy. But by the time we went to people, like to the party, we had already had people behind us. So it was like, you know what, you don't have to listen. I'm just letting you know that I think you already know that we exist. But hi, I'm Summer, and I want to help, and I want to serve. And there were so many people who were ready for that change, that even within the party, we had folk coming to us like, oh, well, I wish I could help. That was upsetting. I wish that all of those people who said that they agree with what we're doing, and we see you, and we're watching, and everybody's worried. Okay, well, say something. Step up. You know, risk something, because we're risking something. Mm-hmm. So other than that, which we didn't expect in the first place, it would have been a pleasant surprise. But other than that, I would say that because we had people and we organized people first, that it was overwhelmingly just positive. And I think people kind of stayed silent. We never got, in my campaign, we never got like the disrespect. There was no negativity from the other side. And that was shocking to me. Like, a lot of times we were waiting, like, what are they going to do? Like, some attack. That never happened. So I am super grateful for that, because I think that's everybody's fear when they decide to run. Like, okay, well, they're going to slander my family. They're going to, like, the comment sections are going to be terrible. But that didn't happen. So hopefully that will encourage more people to, like, okay, I can do this too.
Yeah, and it was just finding non-traditional validators early on. And those were the people who were in the community who understood the issues that were happening. They understood affordable housing. They understood the health care. They understood the lack of good jobs that exist in and around the area. And, you know, realizing, like, human psychology, change is hard, right? So even people who are in the establishment who are still anti-status quo or wanted to see a change still couldn't believe that we could provide that. So we really had to show them.
Right.
We had to say, okay, that's fine. We understand, like, we're doing something that's really out of the box, non-traditional.
It's scary.
And not holding that against them and saying, like, okay, I'm still going to have a sit and have a conversation with you. The name of our game a lot of times was neutralization and just saying, like, we're going to have a conversation with you. We know you're not on our side, but, you know, you're going to be someone we have to work with, you know, when we are successful.
And can you not destroy us now?
Destroy us now. We're really nice people. And I think people, you know, at the end of the day, people love that human connection. And they saw the genuineness in the motives that were driving us to run. And even though they didn't believe that we would win, they were still respectful of our reasoning and what we were able to build. So it's been post-primary has actually been very positive.
Yeah.
So there's
been
a lot of, we have a lot of new friends, but a lot of relationships that we cultivated along the way and didn't throw out. We said
we have a lot of old friends too.
Exactly. We brought in a lot of new people into the political process. There were a lot of people who had been in the political space for a long time who supported us. And then we were able to bring in some, like, converts and some new believers into the space. And that's really what we have to do to be able to push this progressive agenda.
I feel like our supporters are the ones who, like, everybody who knocked the door for us, made a phone call, donated. Those folk all thought we were winning. Like, from day one, they were like, we're taking this, we're doing it, what we got to do.
Because they're already down. They're already doing the work. Yeah. Like,
they were in the trenches. They were so ready for this victory. Like, if you had even looked at them and said, guys, it's looking rough, they would be like, stop. You're crazy. You're crazy. We're winning this. Now, I don't know if anybody, for any of y'all, like, anybody else believe y'all, like, but your moms?
my experience was dramatically different. I had that same experience at the doors. Like, when we were speaking in front of people, when we were at the doors face to face, we were winning those doors and winning that room. But my experience was dramatically different. Before I even announced, I had the sort of local party establishment threatening me and harassing me about not even getting into the race. So I won a school board seat last fall with an historic number of votes in the race. It was a really great campaign. Four of us became the first Democrats on this school board ever. And as soon as there was a little bit of a hint of I might run, the local Dem party establishment had already picked their wealthy, middle-aged woman whose turn it was, and they were very upset. So they started a really fierce whisper campaign that I was an egomaniac that was about to abandon my hard-won school board seat, and it was really rough.
That's terrible.
Yeah, they worked really hard against me, and they made sure that my primary opponent got all of the local Dem party endorsements, and that I was shut out of, you know, the county party endorsement, and I just showed up to everything and smiled and greeted everyone and, you know, just did the work.
Yeah.
So I definitely did not have any traditional supports or any establishment support. And in fact, they were all pretty angry about what I was doing. But I saw a need. I understood what it would take to unseat the incumbent this fall. And I knew what my qualifications were and why I was in this. So I brought my people together and the base of support I had in the community and just worked as hard as I could. And in the end, I did not have some giant landslide win. I won by 65 votes. And all of that I attribute to the incredible hard work that our DSA Philly volunteers did getting our campaign out, because we were a lean, not incredibly well-funded campaign. We were all heart and all hard work. So
that's what's interesting to me is I was expecting, you know, Elizabeth and Kristen both had the experience that I was expecting to hear. And that seems to be the case, I would say, for most people that I've spoken to and read about who are running across the country. When they're running from to the left of the Democratic Party. And I wonder how much of it's just a Pittsburgh thing for you guys. What are you guys, everyone's super nice over there in Pittsburgh? Or?
I mean, everyone is
super nice. No, we're nice.
Make it hard for people to be mean to us.
But I mean, what I'm saying is, you know, there's a lot of, Kristen and Elizabeth seem nice, but they didn't get welcomed with open arms from
our opponents weren't like,
great. I don't know.
Yeah.
So there's definitely some antiquated structures that exist in Allegheny County.
Oh, heck yeah.
Democratic Party. It's pay to play. To be even considered for the endorsement, you have to cut a $2,500 check.
$2,500.
That's a lot of money. And
it keeps us out of it.
Pay to play gave that away. It's like, we know we're not going to get the endorsement, but guess what? We're here to play. Take us seriously. We can raise this money and we can raise more of it. And so we paid that money, and what that's supposed to do is give you access to everyone who's a committee member, and they're supposed to.
Oh, they were terrible.
And stuff, and none of that happened. They pretty much said on the first day of the petition, they gave the current reps, like, they handed out all of their petitions, and then, okay, we'll see you after the endorsement. We'll see you when it's due. So. Like, none of they didn't hold anything.
Yeah.
They didn't respond to any of our
calls. Some of them were like, oh, we already know who we're going with. So they were terrible, but I think what we knew is that they did not have the key to the community.
Exactly. We were like, they're not representative of the community. They're not representative of the people. This is just, like, a part that we're going to play a role in. We're going to go through this.
Yeah.
We're going to jump through these hoops because we know we kind of have to.
So that when we do win, they can't say that we didn't.
Mm-hmm.
That we didn't do this or we didn't do that.
Right.
We reached out to you. You weren't interested in us.
Yeah. No. Which one of you, Summer or Sarah, which one of you had the opponent who actually, I guess when he realized he was losing, decided to try to get on the Republican ballot?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So first of all, what were you thinking when you saw that? And what was the reaction to that? Like, here you have, he was the incumbent. How many years was he serving as a sitting member sitting Democrat in the House?
10.
So here you have a 10-year incumbent, apparently someone who feels like he's, you know, the Democratic Party is where he belongs, 10 years. And then all of a sudden, you come along, he sees the way the wind's blowing, I guess, and he tries to run as a Republican. What was the reaction to that?
Gratitude. He was very helpful in our campaign, especially in the final weeks.
That was it.
Yeah, I was like, thank you. and it's something, you know, that it actually, like, if you know the political game here, it's something that happens, right? Like, people try to get the write-ins kind of under the radar. But, like, don't send out a mailer to all the Republicans where there's, like, physical evidence that you're asking for.
It exists.
That exists simultaneously with a series of mailers that say you're the progressive voice in Harrisburg. Like, it bred, like, a lot of resentment towards him, and a lot of,
it was audacious.
People just didn't, like, that was, in my opinion, as, like, just a Democrat who was represented by him, I'm like, this is not right. Like, do you think that we're ignorant people, that we don't understand that, like, who you really are and what you really stand for?
Also, because we like smart politics. Like, come on, dude. It was 300 votes. You didn't have 300 friends who you could just call silently.
He got like 282 write-ins, which was like
pretty close, actually.
He was very close, very close.
But like, still just like.
He was the former Pittsburgh police chief, right? Was that? Yeah.
Yeah, and he's endorsed by the FOP locally, and they tend to be pretty conservative and actually endorse a lot of Republican candidates. Or whatever Republican candidates come. To Allegheny County, which tends to be pretty blue, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they espouse progressive values or policies.
Right. From reading articles, I know that when you, Summer, when you won, your opponent, the other Costas, he did reach out and he congratulated you and you know, did that happen with you too? Because I don't see Sarah, because I didn't see him running as a Republican. for people who are just going to listen to the audio of this on the podcast, Sarah and Summer are both shaking their heads no.
I did not get a phone call. I'm waiting.
So it's going to come one day.
So that's incredible. Like, you know, and the fact that you're one of the people saying that the, you know, the establishment of the party was they were nice to you after that, I'd be on a full on revenge.
No, he's a Republican though.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's true. Like,
yeah.
Right.
He ended his career becoming a Republican.
That's true.
Like, are we here to hold grudges? Or are we here to get shit done? Like, we're here to get shit done. Exactly. So like, it doesn't matter.
Right.
It doesn't matter. I don't care where you were before May 15th, if you're with me now and you're going to provide resources and we're going to work towards the same vision,
yeah.
I'm here for it. You're
welcome. Yeah, if you're about this funding scheme for education, if you're about this environment, you know, Medicare, if you're about a living wage, if you're about doing the work to support these vulnerable communities, come on, yeah. You're on the team.
Exactly.
In my case specifically, the top line message right now is, would you like a Democrat to represent you? We'd love to have you. Thank you so much. I've still got a Republican incumbent to fight in the fall.
Right, right. I want to point out for everyone listening that Summer, Sarah, and Elizabeth, you go on to the general, and you guys, as of right now, unless someone does pull something out of their, you know, out of the hat.
An independent or a write-in.
Right. You guys don't have a Republican opponent in the general, so you guys are in the general.
Feeling good.
Yeah. You guys are good to go. But yeah. Kristen, on the other hand, you have a Republican opponent come the fall in the primaries. Now, tell me how this, you know, how this changes things up for you, whereas, you know, for Elizabeth, Summer, and Sarah, they're not playing the same game right now.
So I'll say, first of all, that I'm super grateful that you guys are there. Like, we can count on you representing us in Harrisburg. That is a huge win for everyone. For me, this means I have $500,000 to raise in the next couple of months. For me, this means I have a lot of unifying to do amongst folks around here. We've got to get as many volunteers together around this as possible. I'm still working on more endorsements, more recruiting. So now it's campaign 2.0. We turn the volunteer way up. We're going to work three times as hard. But I'm also somebody that my family depends on my income and I work full time.
Yeah.
So the biggest challenge for me right now is making sure that we're properly staffed and properly resourced so that I can continue to do this while working.
Right.
And I think that that's actually a really critical thing for this moment in time. I think that if we don't start creating a world where working people can be elected, like Summer and Sarah were saying, we can't ever expect to see ourselves reflected in politics when these structures are in place to hold us out. So I'm hell-bent on proving that I can continue to work to support my family and do the public service work that I'm doing and win this race, but I'm going to need a lot of help.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So where can people go, Kristen, for you specifically, being that you have a Republican to face in the general? Where can people go to help you out? And, you know, what's your website? Give us some information here. I want to make sure you plug it right here. So, you know, we'll plug everybody again where their websites and everything at the end of the show. But let's get you in here because you have more work to do against the Republican Party.
We all have a lifetime of work to do against the Republican Party.
Right, that's true. Yeah. But we have to get you in. There we go. We have to get you in.
So the easy version of the website is serve168th.com. It's kristenseal.com, 2 I's, no E's in my first name. My handle on Twitter is serve168th, same thing on Facebook. But definitely we have opportunities to utilize volunteers from literally anywhere on the globe. There's phone banking work, there's postcarding work, there's texting work, there's all kinds of work for people to do, whether or not you're in Southeast Pennsylvania. So any and all comers, we are so happy to have you on board as volunteers. Obviously, we also need funding, but we know how to make quite a lot out of a little. We raised a fraction of what most people running these primaries did, and still won. So I feel like we're able to take a lean amount of resources and make quite a lot out of them. Any help helps us get across the finish line. But I think that you can also trust that when you share your time with us or share funding with us, that we will absolutely maximize it as well.
Right. And so let's talk about, you know, one of the reasons I think, I mean, not I think, obviously, because it's just in all the headlines about you guys. One of the reasons your four races have gotten so much attention is that your four women who won your races and were backed and openly backed, like you guys advertised that you were backed by the Democratic Socialists of America, DSA. And, you know, how much, you know, how much did that, you know, affect in terms of, you know, did you come across people who found that out and you know, who socialism, you know, is that something that you guys came across? I'm not an official member of the DSA, but I'm a full-on supporter. I consider myself to be a socialist. And so I want to know, for, you know, especially for people who are going to be running in races coming up, who are, you know, DSA members or backed by the DSA or consider themselves to be socialists, you know, what was the reaction from your constituents? What was your, well, your soon-to-be constituents, I guess. I don't know if you, are they officially your constituents yet? I guess they are.
No, not yet. Because, well, we still have an election.
Right. Well, for three of you, I think you guys can, I think you guys are good. Uh-huh. I think you guys are good.
I don't do any jinxing thing.
And I think Kristen's going to win too, but there's that Republic. Is it that, you know, is the, what is the, is it a Republican? Is he, what are the, like, what's the analysts currently saying about that one?
He's a one-term incumbent who
so
is
the incumbent,
former,
right.
former chief of staff of who's now the senator in my district. So, you know, he doesn't have a huge track record and his vote record is not great. He's in my opinion, relatively benign, but that doesn't mean it won't be hard. We
right.
are, mm-hmm. I'm in the county seat of a war machine that has been, you know, Republican control of our county since the Civil War that we only started breaking up last year in 2017. So I do have constituents because I'm still elected. And I will be, even after I take a state house seat, I will keep both seats because school board doesn't pay. So you can have both. There are lots of folks in the house that are mayor of their town as well as representatives. So, but it's... I think that I face a tough race against the Delaware County Republican machine more than I face a tough race against this particular incumbent.
Right. Mm-hmm. Got it. So let's get to the question. What was the reaction from people about the DSA and, you know, being Democratic Socialists?
You know, for me, I was I'm happy to have their endorsement. I had the endorsements of a lot of groups in the community. Actually, a lot of unions, including the teachers and the nurses union, city workers. So I had a lot of support. For me, DSA was one piece of that. My campaign knocked more than 55,000 doors.
Wow.
And yeah, it's a lot of doors, right? And
right.
I know you all knocked a lot too. So I was happy to have DSA's support. I still am. We believe in a lot of the same things. I ran for office because I want to fight for working people, make sure we can all have high quality health care. And I really think that our society should be run democratically to meet human needs and not to make profits for a few corporations. And that's really why I decided to run for office. So, you know, I personally do not apply a lot of labels to myself. I think more about policy and the kind of world that I want to fight for my two kids and for future generations. And, you know, for me, DSA, if you look at the numbers, like statistically, the doors that they knocked were just statistically a small fraction of the 55,000 that we knocked. So I don't know if it's different for all of you, but, you know, statistically for me, it was not a large percentage of my support. Though I'm really happy to have the endorsement of the DSA. I was happy to speak with mm-hmm. them. The members are amazing. And, you know, we had so many people who live in the district who are passionate about it. So, you know, that's mm-hmm. kind of how it fit into my campaign. We had a really massive field operation that was already up and running before I got DSA's endorsement. So, you know, I think that's just important to point out that while I'm excited that they're getting, you know, involved in local races in this way, it wasn't for me the make or break. It wasn't.
Right.
Yeah. We also don't want to, like, for candidates who are running against the status quo, for them to think, like, well, if I have DSA, then I'm good. Like,
exactly.
It's a lot of work to build a really, really robust network of folks.
Yep.
So DSA was an early validator for us, but so was Run for Something, which is a national organization that supports candidates under 35 who are progressive Democrats, and Vote Pro Choice, which is, again, a national group that is invested in supporting candidates who support reproductive justice. So we built early validators. We built a lot of ground game.
And then we got, by the end of it, I think we had more than 24 endorsements from individuals, from organizations.
National and local.
Yep, statewide organizations. Labor was really hard for us here in Pittsburgh because both of our reps had been good on labor votes.
The UE came out for us.
But yeah, the UA, which tends to break from the AFL-CIO, and even with, despite having those traditional endorsements, and they say, like, you can't win a Democratic primary without labor, for us to really show that, like, we stand with you. And that was important, too. We spoke in front of the Labor Council, and when we didn't get it, we called them, and we said, hey, this is still the corner and core of our message.
Right. And honestly, if here in Pittsburgh, for me and Sarah, at least, we talk about, like, the socialist label and all of that. That was started by the media. And so I think it was quite benevolent. I don't know if it was benevolent so much as that. I don't think it was malicious at all. I think, however, that we need to have a better conversation, and we need to have the media be more responsible for headlines and for narratives that they're pushing.
Right.
They never called us and told us and asked us for explanation, like, what does that mean for you? What does democratic socialism mean for you?
Right.
And they never did the real work, late work, to explain to the readers, you know, what is socialism?
Yeah.
How do these policies, you know, interplay with the system that we already have?
Right.
And I think that did the people a disservice. What we were able to do is we were able to take that conversation, take that bait, because it was bait, right? We were able to take that bait. That scares people, that scary word. And when we were up on these doors, we were able to talk to them. Hey, you know what? Do you know that historically, or do you know that these programs will benefit you? Do you know that capitalism hasn't worked for you? You know, we were able to do that, to have these one-on-one conversations. And I think that they were conversations that needed to be had. I wish that the media would be more nuanced in them and more brave in facilitating them. But where they failed, I think we were on the doors. We invited people to come. We had things in public, and we talked to folks, and I didn't have very much problem with it. I had, like, I heard that I lost 3 votes, maybe.
I heard I lost people wanted votes. To use it.
They're like, I can't vote for a socialist.
Yeah,
right. See, that's
the McCarthy era stuff.
Right.
Venezuela.
And mentioned Venezuela and like Red Scare voters. It doesn't work to the masses, but it definitely still.
Summer, I actually think you're being a little bit too nice to the media. Actually, I do think that they're labeling you guys that way. Really?
Oh, now it's out of control.
Yeah, that was totally.
I meant in the early days when we had our first headline. It was the socialist versus Costas.
Right. No, but
I think it was like whoa. It was like whoa.
And that wasn't meant to be nice. That wasn't meant to be
right.
Good
no, exactly.
But the thing
it was
is, the
very clickbaity
of that article. Was very much like, oh, these are very rational women who are really pragmatic in their policy making.
And very people centered and very common sensical
women win.
Right.
Yeah.
No, but
but I think people realize that about us. So they saw first of all, I don't think most people read the media. They don't read newspapers as much as you think. But for those couple who did, I think when they interacted with each of us, all of us, they realized that we are all qualified, intelligent, you know. Really genuine, hardworking women, and they could not deny that when they saw us. They could not deny that our message resonated with them. You can pick it apart all you want with a word, but then at the end of the day, you're like, oh, wow, that makes perfectly good sense.
No, but I think actually that's a great point to make because, you know, I think that word is still, even though young people are increasingly saying that they're open to socialism and, you know, DSA's numbers skyrocketing since Trump's been elected and Bernie Sanders running his very successful campaign and being a proud and open and democratic socialist, I think all those things combined and then like you guys were just saying where, you know, a lot of people don't realize when they're talking about policy, you know, a lot of those policies are, you know, the popular welfare programs, Social Security, universal health care. All those things are things that are pushed by
public education.
Public education. Thank you. Yes. All these things and many more are all what would be considered, you know, if you go to, you know, to Europe or, you know, the Nordic countries who consider themselves to have more
Canada,
socialist leanings,
Canada
even. Yeah.
If you break your leg in Europe, you're not going to go bankrupt.
Right, exactly. These are all things that the media or the right try to label as, you know, the when they say socialism, they mean it in a spooky way, you know, spoo socialism. But like, yeah, that's what they're trying to do. And I think all those things, you guys out there, you know, the rise of, you know, young people coming up and believing in these things, I think they are coming together and saying, you know, like, that word is not going to work anymore. Like, you can call us a socialist, you can call us democratic socialist, whatever. If that's how you want to label us, whatever, you're not going to, that label's going to, is going to, whether it sticks or not, it doesn't matter, because people are going to hear that, hear the policies we believe in, and go, yeah, I like these people.
And I think,
and in parts of my, and in parts of my district, like, for instance, I'm black. Come on. If you look at my community has been ravaged by capitalism, by white supremacy, by these systems that have been created to hold us down. So if anybody is going to go into my neighborhood and say, she's a socialist, don't vote for her, I would be like, hold up. My community, the label doesn't matter. But when you could talk to them and educate them on the policies that impact them, I think there are so many people, whether it be the more affluent, white, progressive areas of my community or those poor black ones who are looking for something different. Who are able to realize, maybe we don't have the word for it, maybe we don't have the word for the identity, the label, but we're looking for a system that works better than what we have.
Right.
Because intuitively, we see that this isn't working for us. So when they came to try to scare people with it, they're like, well...
You know, there was a recent study, I think Summer and Sarah, you guys froze for a second, but I think I got everything there. You know, there was a study I saw recently, actually, that said how it was a study where they polled... white, Asian, Latino, and black young people, I believe millennials, and they asked them for their how they view capitalism and socialism. And the only group that viewed capitalism better than socialism was white millennials. Black, Latino, and Asian millennials all viewed socialism more favorably than capitalism, and it was black millennials who viewed socialism most favorably. And again, when we say socialism, we're talking about these programs that people, like, if you just poll people on these individual programs, all people, doesn't just have to be millennials who get it.
Yeah, without using the word.
Yeah, without using the word socialism, you poll old people, you know, people 65 plus, you poll these older people and ask them, you know, how they feel about Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, all sorts of programs, public education, overwhelmingly positive. And
that's a big part of what happened in our DSA canvas in my community, which is predominantly Caucasian, white collar, and mostly blue collar. And no, it's mostly white collar and slightly blue collar. But the DSA canvassers from Philly are experienced Medicare for all canvassers. And we made that a central focus of the message. And it played incredibly well at the doors. People were so responsive to the Medicare for all message. And specifically to conversations about the social safety net, but also, like Summer and Sarah were saying, we have a lot of progressives out here that feel abandoned by the party and leadership and are looking for someone that stands on the values that they care about. And so I think that we brought a message to the doors that a lot of people were really excited about and ready to have conversations about. And a little bit excited to hear that there was an organized group of people that was doing work around the social safety net in our area.
Right. So yeah, I guess, you know, one thing I want to bring up, actually, while we're talking about demographics, I recently saw from Dave Wasserman, who's at Redistrict on Twitter, he broke down the congressional primary races so far for Democrats. This doesn't include, you know, state races, I believe. And he said that there have been 65 Dem House primaries with at least one woman and one man on the ballot. And women have won 45 of those races. And I think, you know, looking at, you know, all four of you are women, obviously. And I think we're seeing something here. But it's not just that you guys are women, because it's that you guys are progressive. And I think that's really what the country is, at least, you know, I do think the country, but definitely Democrats are heading to. And I think progressive women are going to be the future in all these races, because A, look at what we're dealing with on the Republican side, and look what we're dealing with on, you know, with Trump and his administration. But also, you know, the Democrats have not been able to face this. the way that they need to. And it's shown in how people are voting. And then when you just look how you guys came out as unabashedly progressive, the numbers aren't even like, you know, for I know Kristen, your race was close, but it seems like your district's a little bit different than the others. You guys won by a lot. Like, it wasn't even close. And I think there's something to this. And if you guys could speak to that a little bit, you know, just the fact that progressive women are cleaning up, even when there's another woman in the race. It's, you know, the progressive women who are coming up and showing that they are going to be the future of the Democratic Party.
I think in part something we all have in common is that people are responding to authenticity, and all of us embracing not just our personal identity politics, but our beliefs in a really sincere way. I think people respond to that.
Right. And because if you just look at the race with Stacey Abrams in Georgia, like, she was, yeah, it was fantastic to see her win, and by a lot. And, you know, I think there was, and of course, as if you look, actually, the grassroots were behind her from early on. And then it seemed like as it became obvious that she was going to be the candidate, and it was because she was progressive, and it was because she has the ability come in the general to truly be a historic. You know, she already is a historic candidate, but she has the ability to now become the first ever, I believe, nationwide black woman governor.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then when the establishment saw this, you know, I believe Hillary and other, you know, establishment figures jumped in and endorsed her later on, which is great. I want to see the establishment realize before it's too late, we got to jump on this progressive bandwagon. Yes.
Well, and she, like, Stacey really was of the establishment. She just was anti-status quo. She was just working within the system to try to change it. And that's what we need both of, right? We need people who are going to be brought up through the system and know that it needs to change. But we also need outside influence, like our races.
Right.
And saying that we recognize what is being left, who is being left behind in this process, and engaging those folks and knocking on doors that have never been knocked on in the entirety that folks have lived there, because they're poor, right? And that they don't tend to go out and vote because there has been so much trust eroded between governing bodies and people that we were really acting as a bridge and saying, like Liz said, being authentic and rebuilding that trust. But also being willing to work.
Sorry.
Principles.
There we go. You guys broke up. Yeah, just go back a little bit. Yeah. Again, for anyone just listening, Sarah and Summer are outside right now. What are you in front of right now? What is, I just see like Bach choir.
We're at a coffee shop.
Okay.
I don't know what this is. We're in a
coffee shop. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know anything about the Bach choir.
Okay. Where I was like, are you guys.
We're off out of 61B.
Having all our meetings. So we had to have all our meetings.
Yes, in my district today.
Right.
Always spending money at local businesses.
Yes.
Right.
This is a local run coffee shop, and we had one before that across the street at another local one restaurant. So hashtag local, hashtag District 34.
Right.
But yeah, just talking about our races were really about rebuilding trust between governing bodies and people.
Yes, the everyday people.
And working with people in the establishment who hold our values of centering people, but also inviting new folks into it, new voices.
And they exist. Those folk inside of the establishment who hold our values, they exist, but they have been overwhelmed and they have been overpowered. So you can't attack them. It's a dance.
Right.
But I think, I mean, answering your question too about kind of what these wins mean and how like women, progressive women have been able to do it. If you think about it,
Sorry, Summer, you guys broke up again. It's okay.
As soon as you say something, I know, it's all good. in Allegheny County, where Sarah, both of our districts are, voter turnout was, I believe, 19%.
On average, for primaries, it's
about
17 and 19%.
In some parts of my district, it's as low as 10%.
Right.
And what happens is that establishment status quo folk, they consider the majority out of the 10% or out of the 19%. And what they do not consider is that of that 90%, that all of those folks feel completely differently. They have no idea how those people in the 90% feel, and they don't care to learn. So they always say that, okay, well, we always have the majority of the 10%, which means that we're winning. Our thoughts win. Our values won out. But if they were to go into the communities and ask those people, those 90%, why aren't you voting? What do you care about? We were able to tap into that.
Right.
We were able to talk to people who had never identified with these parties, had never identified with the system, but had been craving someone to come and speak to them and include them.
Mm-hmm. That's a fantastic.
And it was in numbers. It was reflected in the turnout in Liz's race and Summer's district in my district were above 30%.
Right.
And there's huge power in showing up at someone's door, right? Just showing up at someone's door saying, hi, I'm Elizabeth. I'm your neighbor. I'm running for state representative. Mm-hmm. I think that we should have a government that focuses on serving human needs, not on profits for the few. That's something that's really important to me. Right. Let me tell you why we struggled to get health care for my family. I want to hear more from you. What do you want your government to be doing, right? Just showing up and doing a lot of listening and being a real person, right?
Yep.
Being a real person with struggles and vulnerabilities.
Just like
all my neighbors. Yep, exactly. And I think that along with all the support that I got from grassroots organizations and from, I was lucky enough to have some support from unions too. I think that's at least why I won here. And that combined with volunteers knocking a lot of doors. That for me is really the story in South Philly.
I think that's fantastic.
Bring something up from,
Go ahead. No, go ahead, please.
I was just going to come back to Stacey for a moment in Georgia because she wrote a piece on how much personal debt she was in. And she used that as her story of being in debt because of student loans, because of family issues.
Thank you.
And that really built a bridge between her constituency in Georgia and herself and saying, like, I'm a real person and I have the same struggle. So I'm super...
I am
really invested in solving this problem.
Yeah,
right. This isn't just a policy for me. This isn't just an idea. Mm-hmm. This is real.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's personal. It's deeply personal for all of us.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's really, you know, let me there's a few things going on here. So let me just get to the first one. You know, the fantastic point here is that I see so many, national Democrats focus on, you know, how do we reach out to these Republicans? That's how we win. We have to get the votes from them. But you guys have just pointed out that there's so many people who just don't vote. And if we could reach out to them and get them active and get them wanting to vote, and because, you know, I guarantee that the people who don't vote, it's way more people who would vote for candidates like you than people who would vote for candidates who are Republican. I know it. It's because they're not
Democratic advantages in a lot of places. Registration advantages. On the whole, Republicans are, there are fewer registered Republicans, but they vote in higher proportions.
Right.
In a lot of districts, you know, that whole strategy of we have to run the most moderate, damn near conservative candidate on the Democratic Party in these red areas. Which are
It's okay.
And not to the Democrat who's sitting at home. You broke up.
Yep. It's all right, though. If you want to, you can repeat it. It's all right. Wow, you got, you know, it's
if
weird.
It was poignant.
You guys were in this public place this whole time, like an hour now, and no problems until like the last like 10 minutes. It's amazing. Maybe they're like cutting you guys off. Yeah, we're going to wrap it up in a minute. I just want to get one more thing in here. So, you know, like we were talking about, for me personally, actually, the reason I'm sort of, I guess, you talking to you guys, it actually makes me feel really positive because I'm experiencing something a little bit different here in New York. Full disclosure, I am doing a little bit of work on the Cynthia Nixon's campaign against against Governor Cuomo.
Thank you.
And no problem. I mean, she is Governor Cuomo. I don't think people know here that Cuomo is practically a Republican. Simply because, and even if you want to look at some of the things he's done that you can argue are progressive or whatever, it is a fact that here in New York, where the majority of people are Democrats, it's not even, it's like more than like a 2-to-1. A majority of the people are Democrats. Our house does not reflect that because he has allowed a group of conservative Democrats to form a group called the IDC, which basically caucuses with Republicans. So whenever we try in New York try to pass progressive policy and Cuomo pretends he's for this progressive policy, he's able to use this group of conservative Democrats who he knows are going to stop this policy basically as cover for himself to say, oh, can't do anything about it. The Republicans outvote us, when it's just not true. And he does this because he wants to come across as some sort of bipartisan governor for his larger aspirations to one day become the president of the United States. Because apparently he hasn't realized that there's no way the country is ever going to vote for Andrew Cuomo to be president. But New York apparently likes him enough that he thinks that. So, you know, we're seeing first of all, like, the DNC has come out and said straight up that they would not get involved in any of these primaries because they don't want to tip the scale and they want the voters to decide fully for these primaries when it's, you know, a Democrat versus a Democrat. They broke that specifically for this race with Tom Perez coming out just this past week and full-on endorsing Cuomo over Cynthia Nixon without telling Keith Ellison, who is his vice chair of the DNC. And apparently this caught a lot of the DNC by surprise. No one knew Tom Perez was going to officially endorse. We had Biden and Hillary come out and endorse Cuomo. So here in New York, we're seeing, you know, almost the complete 180 than what you guys saw in Pittsburgh in terms of the entire establishment is fighting against Cynthia Nixon. And they've already gotten all aboard with Cuomo. And it's for me, it's lifted my spirits to hear that it's not happening nationwide. And that, you know, there is going to be, because without a doubt, I think Cynthia Nixon can win. But it's going to be probably the most uphill battle race I've ever seen.
And I would like to say that we all won, too, right? Regardless of what reception we got from where, right? That it's possible.
Yeah. Right.
It's possible
races. Yeah, and I don't think the establishment didn't fight us. Don't get us wrong. The establishment didn't know how to fight us.
Right, yeah. Right. That's a great point.
They would have if they could, but they did not know how to combat this.
Yeah.
They don't know how to combat this movement. And that's why it's powerful.
Right.
I think in a lot of ways, they also don't know how to work. We all put in a lot of work. I think they're used to sort of throwing money at the problem, you know, sort of orchestrating institutional position holders to help them in committees or in structures, that we circumvent all of that and just work hard. And so I think that we run different kinds of campaigns that they don't know how to counter because they've never done that work.
Right.
And that strategy relies on low voter turnout.
Right, right.
As long as we can keep the same people turning out to vote every year, then we can keep doing that. We can rely on the structure, on our money, on our threats. When you go and reach people who are outside of the system, it crumbles.
Right, right. And let's get to the point of, let's end on this, because I think it's important. I think it'll push people who have been thinking, dabbling with the idea of, you know, maybe I should run for office, but, you know, I want to really stress just how important these state house races are. Because, you know, some people might hear like, oh, progressives could win in these local races, but, you know, nationwide. But people don't realize just how important these local, you know, you guys are going to be hopefully all in the PA state house, and it's a legislative body. And, you know, especially I think in an age where, you know, the federal government is run by the Trump administration. You know, these offices, I think, are more important than ever. Because I think, you know, what states are able to do, you know, we're already seeing it with, like, you know, here's a random example. You know, net neutrality probably will not be the law of the land in this country anymore. But a number of states have already taken the action to make sure it is the law of the land in their state. And that will not be possible in red states or states where they're more purple. And that will be possible in blue states. And that's just how important these seats you guys are, these races you guys have taken part in, how important they are. And if you guys could just speak to that, I think it's the perfect way to end it and really, you know, stress how important the offices you guys will hopefully hold are, and also inspire people that, you know, I should start here and I should do this. Even if I don't think, you know, I can't face the establishment or the status quo and in these nationwide races, these congressional races, but you can do it here for sure.
Mm-hmm. You can do it here. And I mean, it's state houses that so many decisions are made about environmental regulations, education,
right,
funding, healthcare, women's access to healthcare, things like that that are so vital to people's lives. And I think people do need to run for office, right? They need to think about why they would do it. And if it is to serve the people and they want to put in the hard work, then yes, run. Because if you don't run, you will not win. You won't win, right? So we need to have people who are ready to step up and run for these offices, be it city council, school board, state house, because that's also how we're going to get people doing the hard work in the state houses and then eventually in the pipeline to run for other offices, right? Right. So I think that it's so important that people get involved locally in running for office and also supporting these local races.
Supporting. Yeah.
Yeah. People, and, I mean, Summer and Sarah are the future. You've got to get in young. If we ever want women and progressives and LGBTQ candidates and people of color to be leadership of the party, to be seniority in a place like a state house or the Congress, you have to start young. We have got to stop prohibiting women from doing this because they are mothers or because they are working two jobs. We've got to find ways to make sure that people are getting in young and fast so that we can become party leaders.
And please, for the love of all things holy, like, if you are a white man and you're like a progressive and like truly like want to do this to help people, like, just look around you and just say, hey, is there someone else who can run? Is there a woman? Is there a person of color? Is there someone who has a disability? Is there an LGBTQ individual who also has the same sort of experience and passion? And maybe you can help them run instead, because the only way that we're going to see long-term growth in our legislature is if we get a diversity of voices around that table. And right now, unfortunately, it is occupied mostly by cisgendered white men.
Right. And I think that reflects with the politics, too. You know, anyone who listens and thinks, you know, no, but it's really women, and especially women of color and LGBTQ women. They really are more progressive, just that simple. So if you want progressive policy, if you care about the policy, if you care about things that will help you and your family and your friends and your community, you know, we need to get these sort of candidates, like the four women you're looking at or listening to, depending on how you're watching the show. You know, these are the people.
To be honest, it's our freedoms that are the most at risk.
Oh, yeah.
That too. Yes, exactly. Yep. That's another great
These policies
point.
Disproportionately impact these communities, but we're the ones who are not there. Who's going 100%. To prioritize our needs if we are not the ones who are there?
Right. And that's why they're not there, because they're, it's missing, which is why we're bringing more of these voices. We need to bring
it
more
is,
of these
they cycle.
In.
So we can have our opinions and our life experiences in the room for every discussion, right? About transportation, education, healthcare, all of it.
Exactly. It's
potholes.
Potholes,
everything.
Potholes,
those
trash.
Potholes impact me too.
They do, though. I mean, you know, let's end on the potholes.
Let's end on the potholes. And Kristen, we're gonna. When my volunteers ask me, so what's next? What do we do? I say we've got an election in November, but there's also a couple races we need to go out and knock doors for. So know that we'll be there.
Thank you so much, because your grand team was exceptional. So I really appreciate that.
Absolutely.
And so let's run through all you guys. I want you guys to all be able to, you know, to say where people can go to follow you, to support you, especially you, Kristen. Let's start with you, because you have that Republican challenger coming up. Let's start with you.
And I appreciate that so much. It's servethe168ph.com or kristensteele.com. Yeah, on Twitter, it's servethe168. On Facebook, it's servethe168. And any kind of support, if you've got a couple of hours to make phone calls or text, or we have something we call the Nerd Herd, which is folks that are doing research and data crunching for us. We've got all kinds of volunteer spots. Any bit of volunteering, any bit of cash donation has huge impact in this race. So I thank you.
And you can help from anywhere. Anywhere.
Yeah, literally anywhere. We've got folks across
in the United States
that participate in our Nerd Herd. So.
Elizabeth Fiedler, that's my website. My first name is Elizabeth with a Z. Last name is Fiedler, FIEDLER.com. Contributions, any sort of support is amazing, and we really appreciate it. That's how we got where we are now. And Twitter, Facebook is my last name, Fiedler, FIEDLER, number 4, Philly, PHILLY. And I'm committed to winning in November, and also, as I was saying, to helping some folks here in Pennsylvania who still have general election fights on their hands. So if you sign up or contribute, know that that's where our energy is going right now, too.
Great. So let's now jump over to Pittsburgh. You know, I've actually never been to Pittsburgh. I'm going to have to make my way over there. I've been to Philly a bunch of times, but never been to Pittsburgh. Summer.
You can find me at Summer for PA. Summer, SummerForPA.com. You can find us at Summer, the same thing, Summer for PA. on Twitter. Find me on Twitter. Also, when you hit up summerforpa.com, you can hit the /donate because we're trying to build power in these communities. We are, this is a revolution. Revolutions need money. These are investments. When you think about what we're trying to do here, this is an investment. We're invested in the political future of our neighborhoods, for our demographics. So please donate to all of us. We need it. It will go far. You'll see where it goes. But yes, Summer for PA at all my platforms. My Instagram is at Sojourner, though. Sojourner 2.
And last but not least.
So Sarah Innamorato. I don't make anyone spell Innamorato. So it's Sarah for PA, SarahForPA.com. On Twitter at Innamo, INNAMO, because people could not say my last name. So that was my nickname. And then we're on Instagram at Sarah for PA as well. And on Facebook. So yeah.
All right, guys. Thank you all four of you. Thanks, really, all four of you. Thank you so much for joining me today. So glad you could all do this. Good luck in your races, and I hope I'll be seeing much more of you guys.
Thanks
so much.
Yeah.
Good to see you guys.
Bye. Good to see all of you.
Take care.
Bye, guys.
All right, everybody. Thank you for joining us today. That is our show. You can, let's go through the old, how you can, find us on, where you can find us, where you can support us, all that fun stuff. Hold on. Let me pull up the feed. Skype is now closed. Let me pull this up so we can continue this part of the show where I tell you how to support this program. Perfect. Okay. So you can support this show by going to patreon.com/mattbinder. Only ask for $5 a month, and that gets you guys the ability to say you make this show happen. Hopefully in the near future, as we get inch closer and closer to our goal, I'll be able to have the time to, as we inch closer and closer to our goal of getting certain number of Patreons, I'll be able to give you guys some extra bonus content that should be on the way soon, I think. I feel like we're getting inching closer every episode. You can also support the show by subscribing on iTunes and leaving a iTunes review. We're, I believe, just 10 reviews away. 10 reviews away from 100 reviews, which in less than a year of doing this show, no, less than half a year, I believe I've been doing this show for just over 4 months now, maybe close to five, almost 100 reviews, which I've been, you know, I've been looking around, seeing what people usually expect, and it seems like, you know, for a show of this size, it's pretty damn good. So I'll take it. Let's get those reviews going. What else? You know, tell your friends about the show, the program, all that good stuff. I noticed a lot of people on the YouTube comment feed, and this is one of the fun parts about doing the live stream. Oh, and another point to make about being a Patreon subscriber, I only started doing the YouTube live stream version of the program because of the Patreons. The patrons. Yeah, that's what they're called. The patrons. Sites Patreon, people who donate, patrons. Got it. Yeah, this show previously, before the Patreon, was just, you know, I called someone up, scheduled the interview, we figured out a time, whenever. And we recorded it. I was able to, you know, spend some time editing it. Couldn't see the feed where people would jump in and ask questions, all that fun stuff. You know, that type of stuff. But I do the live stream now thanks to the patrons. What else? Yeah, all right. I'm a little bit discombobulated. I was actually really nervous about this show because getting four guests together. We've done a show on here with plenty of one guest shows, plenty of a few two guest shows, 1-3 guest show, but the four guests, I was a little bit nervous of getting everyone on at the same time, all the issues with, you know, the broadband, with the feed being clear, everyone sounding good, and getting everyone to have the video for the YouTube live stream. Worked out not bad. You know, some Skype issues, but altogether, not bad. And, you know, the live stream adds to it. Couldn't do it without the live stream. The grind is real, says Buy Attack 716. It's true. It's true. And Peter Benson makes the point that he prefers watching to listening now because the shaky audio quality in some of these interviews is mitigated by the visual. Yeah, exactly. You could, you know, if you're watching on YouTube, you can actually 99% of the time make out what they said, even when it cuts out for a second because of the visual. I always try to make sure that I think of the podcast listeners too. You guys are just as important to me as well. Let's go to some more comments here. Louis Carlos said, I'm with her as in reference to Cynthia Nixon. Yes. And Rachel Atwood asked me, actually, why am I not an official member of the DSA? I probably will end up joining the DSA. I think they are a great organization. I actually have, and it has nothing to do with the DSA in particular, I've always sort of had a sort of, you know, not negative view, but a wariness of joining any of these sort of specific political groups like that, specifically because I do think that, you know, sometimes the inter-group drama and, you know, politics sort of, I don't like dealing with that stuff. And I know DSA, like all these other groups, have dealt with a little bit of that. But from the most part, I do think DSA is a great organization. And I probably will end up joining. But yeah, that's my reason. I just don't like, you know, the sort of inter-group politics and drama that comes with. It's the issue with all these groups, though. So it's nothing in particular with DSA. I am an official member of no group like that. Peter Benson said, I won't be happy until there are at least 15 guests on the show. Maybe one day 15 guests will be on the show. I'd have to figure out a new program to do that because the program I use now allows up to 5 guests. So today I was pushing it. Although the fact that Sarah and Summer surprised me by being together in Pittsburgh, so they were only on one feed. If we got a bunch of people to be on just singular feeds, I could probably have unlimited number of guests. If, like, you know, 3 people were on one Skype username and 4 people on another and then 10 people on one. Yeah, I could have, like, who knows? The sky's the limit. Let's go to some more comments here on YouTube. Oh, Rachel, again, with the asked, who's got the siren? Was it me? No, Sarah and Summer in Pittsburgh were out at a coffee shop. So any of the sort of, you know, street chatter and outdoors noise you heard was from their feed. And you know what? I thought it sort of added a little bit of fun to the show. Made it seem like we were out on the street talking to the people. I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm tired. Ben, solidarity from Seattle. Thank you, Ben. Yeah, again, I had a few people say that they jumped in late. This will be a podcast. Again, this YouTube live stream is fairly new. You know, we've only had a dozen. Some of these episodes got a few dozen people on at the same time during the live stream. The live stream is a very small part. The podcast is still mainly how people are listening to the show. We have tens of thousands of downloads a week on the podcast. The audience is the podcast. But I think the live aspect of doing the live stream, letting people know this is live streamed, giving people the opportunity to tune in live, and then also the people who don't tune in live, you know, there's something to knowing you're getting this, the conversation as it happened, how people who were watching it live got to take it in. My experience from working on the Majority Report, which was live, that was a major plus for people. Some people prefer edited, you know, produced like that. Some people prefer it this way. It's a choice. I'll try to figure out a way that makes everybody happy. By Attack, we'll take the last comment here with the question that, do you think Dems are going to take back at least a House of Congress? I do. I don't want to get too into it now. I think we're a little bit too far off. A lot of people are. I just think we're too far off right now. I do think it'll happen. I will have people on this show who are experts at this and know a lot more than me, who've actually, you know, delved into the data and the analysis and can give you real facts to back this all up, which I do not have on me. But from what I'm seeing, I think they will. But I also think it's too far out to say it's safe. Never underestimate the Democrats' ability to fuck things up. It's just the truth. That's why we need more people like Summer and Sarah and Elizabeth and Kristen, who have such good politics, who are progressives, real, true progressives, who care about helping people and care about policy, who, with a candidate like that, who have the grassroots behind them and has the strong ground game and are talking to the people and motivating people and getting people enthused and getting people out the door, out of their doors by knocking on their doors and getting people to vote. When you have a candidate like that, you know that no matter what the Dem Party as a whole does to mess things up, those candidates will still win. They will still pull it out. And if we have enough of those candidates, the Dem Party as a whole, the DNC, the DCCC, the National Dems, whatever they do, forget them. Because candidates like this, if we have enough of them, they'll win and they'll take it all back from the Republicans and replace bad Democrats who can lose to these Republicans. And that's how we'll do it. Renee asks me, where did Hollywood Squares go? I guess you're talking about when people watch on the YouTube, you see all of my guests on like a square, yada, 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 you know. Yeah. Peter Benson, I wish it was just that. They were fucking things up and it didn't seem so much like they were actively working against progressive causes. Well, the two go hand in hand. They're messing things up by not supporting these progressive causes. And they're just so adamant in their ways, they refuse to realize this. And they refuse to see that that's why they're losing. And they refuse to see that this is the way, you know, progressives and leftists and democratic socialists, this is the way things are going. And they're just being stubborn. Renee, inner coup, but the entitled Dem Party will run interference. Yeah, but, you know, this is the way we got to go. Unfortunately, with this, the way the system works here, I know people would love to see the third party or to see an independent run. In New York, you can't do it. The Democratic Party just holds, it has such a stronghold in New York. Just never going to be. So we have that issue, you know. I don't think, unfortunately, right now where we are, the best strategy is for progressives and leftists and democratic socialists and socialists and whatever you consider yourself. We got to work within the Democratic Party by taking over the Democratic Party. We got to run in these Democratic primaries, win these primaries, and win so many of them that we become candidates like Summer and Sarah and Kristen and Elizabeth. They become the face of the Democratic Party. And when people think of the Democratic Party, those are the people that come to mind. That's the best scenario. That's the best strategy. That's the best way to further progressive causes in this country with the way the system is in place. Two parties and a lot of states running as independent or a third party is just, it's out of the question. You're just not going to win no matter how good of a candidate you are. It's just the truth. And Rachel Atwood, I'll give you the last, well, Renee, let me read your thing because it's funny. The Michael Brooks Jacobean Socialist Party. Yeah, okay. Rachel Atwood with the last comment of the stream. Do Working Families Party operate semi-independently from the Dems? All right, this is how the Working Families Party works. They endorse, basically, they don't have to endorse the same candidate as the Democratic Party, as you see this year with Cuomo and Cynthia Nixon. They do, a lot of the times, do so. Last a gubernatorial election primary, they did endorse Cuomo over Zephyr Teachout, who was primarying Cuomo from the left. There was a whole big thing about that where people felt the Working Families Party turned on basically the progressives who were behind Zephyr Teachout. She was the candidate for progressives. But Working Families Party does usually go with the pro-labor progressive candidate, regardless of whether that's the Dem. This year, they went with Cynthia Nixon. And a lot of labor unions actually had a falling out with Working Families because they wanted to go with Cuomo. Now, what happened there is we're talking about the union as in the heads of the union. And they're worried that, you know, they think Cuomo is going to win. And if Cuomo wins and they didn't endorse him and they stuck with Working Families and endorsed Cynthia Nixon, then Cuomo, being the corrupt, vindictive, vengeful guy he is, he would win and then take it out on these unions for not endorsing him, which he would absolutely do. That's what they're looking out for. That's why they had this falling out Working Families and endorsed Cuomo. I'll have someone on who really is a Cuomo. I know a ton of them, actually, more than you can believe, who are Cuomo experts, who are progressives, who can go into the grand, you know, the real detailed versions of what Cuomo has done, and give you, you know, this behind the scenes, because they've been covering Cuomo and New York politics for much longer than I have, who I am also working with, and, you know, not just in the Cynthia Nixon campaign, but outside that too, who I'll have on to talk about that. But yes, that's the type of person Cuomo is. I'm sure union members will back Cuomo, union leaders will back Cuomo. Union members, I'm sure, actually, will go with Cynthia based on her extremely pro-labor progressive platform. So yeah, that's what's going on there. And in New York, you have this cool thing where you can vote Working Families Party and it'll count towards that, in that primary, it'll count towards whoever you voted for. For example, Cynthia is running against Cuomo in the Democratic primary. They will both be on the Democratic ticket. Cynthia now being that Cuomo just got endorsed at the New York State Democratic Convention. He got nominated. So he automatically gets on that ticket. Cynthia now has to get, I believe it is 15,000 signatures. Once she does that, she is also on the Democratic ticket in the primary. She will get that easily, no problem. To give you an example, I'm not just saying that because she has a platform and she has, you know, she is a famous actress. You know, she's not A-list huge like, you know, Tom Cruise, but she's a well-known actress. Zephyr Teachout got on the Democratic line. She got the signatures. So Cynthia will easily be able to do it. But she'll also be on the Working Families ticket. And in New York, you can vote on her to send a message to the Democratic Party on the Working Families ticket, but it will count in her overall vote total. So, you know, let's say she beats Cuomo, but if you look at just the Democratic ticket, she has less votes than Cuomo. If you add in the Working Families Party line votes, which they do, that can be what puts her over. So that's the example I'm giving you. That's how it works in New York. I like how it works. That's one of the few areas where the New York elections run in a way they should. Rachel says that she went to college in New York and wishes she'd be able to appreciate Working Families better at the time. No, they've definitely been around for a while. They've been well known and progressive in progressive politics and progressive world, the grassroots activist groups. But progressive politics and progressive politicians, you know, DSA, they're really receiving this like uprising right now, coming from the Bernie Sanders campaign and Donald Trump winning in 2016. So the Working Families Party has ridden that wave too, well deservedly. So I wouldn't feel bad about not knowing the Working Families Party that well if you were in college at the time, you know. So that's the show for today, folks. We will have a good Memorial Day weekend. We'll have another show, as usual, next week. Again, the Patreon is patreon.com/MattBinder. Leave that iTunes review. If you haven't yet and you're watching live, please go do it now. And that's it. See you all next time on Doomed.